Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with producer, engineer, mixer, guru, Dave Dominguez. We'll be having him on in just a little bit. So as you know, I manage a few producers with Ross Roby, and Dave Dominguez is one of them, and his chipper attitude makes my life a lot better slash easier slash more fulfilling. So thank you very much, Mr. Dominguez. Oh, he spoke. That's great. He'll be speaking more really soon. We also manage Kim Shattuck, who's just on the show. So you can hear her vitriolic hatred for Donald Trump. And I'm letting you know, it's quite intense. We also manage Danny Balistocki, who is the very first guest on the show. We try to keep in the family. There's only so many people that we manage, so we want to get him on early as possible. And Alex Arias, he should be on the show soon as well. Just so you know, on the Waldman's Words broadcast, we've got Kevin Lyman from Warped Tour coming up. We've got Jay Warsinski, who has too many credits to list right now. Otherwise, we'd go over the hour, and I definitely don't want to do that. We've got Hunter Bergen from AFI, which is a big deal for me being a sincere AFI fan, and he's just a really good, down-to-earth, smart, smart guy. We've got Andy Hill from the band Ass Life. That's right, Ass Life, coming onto the show. He's even funnier than his band name. And we've got Kevin from the band Mirror Eyes. And speaking of Mirror Eyes, as you know, they signed a deal with In Vogue Records, and 2017 is going to be a year where I probably don't sleep so much because I'm dealing with a lot of emails, but I love that band. Candy Hearts has some big stuff in store for 2017 too. New music, new everything. It's, without getting too specific, it's going to be a complete shift. As I said before, Film Speed is going through some quote-unquote negotiations, so we're not going to touch on that. And Zach James is completely rebranded now as Boomtown Crooks with his rock and roll sound. So it's a good year for Waldman Management slash Rolling Artists, which is Ross Roby's company, and we manage four producers together. One of which, to my left, as stated before, the lovely, the talented, the affable, the anti-Trump, Dave Dominguez will be on in just a little bit. So sit back, eat some popcorn. You don't have to wear anything to listen to this broadcast. Stay tuned. So to my left, Dave Dominguez. And on my left hand, I just washed because I fist pounded him immediately after he coughed. So this show is going to be interesting, to say the least.
I coughed into my hand, though. Not an open mouth cough.
Oh, okay. So it was more protective than malicious.
Yes, and I turned my head.
Okay, so I guess I should have washed half my hand. Yeah. So anyway, sure, Dave Dominguez, introduce yourself. Tell the world how we met.
It was Facebook.
Bringing people together since MySpace.
Exactly. And I thought about MySpace earlier, in fact, about how cool it was at one point. Anyway, just... okay.
Yeah, I had to physically shove Dave, who, by the way, is a UFC fighter, so that wasn't wise.
Not a UFC, a fan, and I train.
Okay, sorry.
I train, yeah.
I'll say whatever you tell me to say. I don't want my ass beat.
No, it's all right. So Facebook, just doing what I do, looking around for bands, management, trying to introduce myself to different management companies to get in with some of their bands.
And why me? Why me?
I found your bands. I found Film Speed, Candy Hearts, and that led me to everybody else, Zach James.
And talented people.
Yeah. I apologize if I miss anybody.
No, it's okay. Mirror Eyes.
Mirror Eyes.
It doesn't even matter if you miss anyone. Something led you to me.
Just a little shout out and trying to like what you're doing, and we just started talking.
And I don't know if I've revealed this on this show, but I would say in my top 10 albums of all time would be both Weezer's Blue Album and Pinkerton. And just the fact that you were in the same room as them and worked on that record, Pinkerton, makes 1996 Scott like the happiest post-bar mitzvah boy on the planet. I'm just telling you.
Oh, that's the sad part. Post-bar mitzvah, yet I was old enough to be in the studio with him.
Well, I just want to let you guys know that I'm older than every single band member I manage, but I'm happy that I have some grandparent producers that I work with. So, you know, I say, you know, all the time, it's my crutch. It's just, it's good to have some people with some experience because we're, in essence, salesmen for you. Yeah. So we'll get into Weezer later. I could talk about Pinker. I could talk about the track Tired of Sex for an entire hour, even though I don't get it. So we met through Facebook. You hit me up, which is nice. It's flattering. And then we had a phone conversation, and then we had a coffee date, which was lovely. They served coffee. Fish, get this. Oh, yeah. I had coffee in, like, a Guinness mug. They were really – it's in West Hollywood. Do you remember the name?
No.
Oh, fuck. But it was coffee that was prepared like we were in an artisan bar.
Oh, yeah.
And it was money.
I can never understand, too. You go to some of those nicer coffee bars, when they serve the croissants, they put them on the little flat wood boards, like –
like a cutting board?
Yeah, you never haven't been there yet?
No.
Yeah, okay, maybe. I love coffee, so I end up going to some of these places, and they serve the croissants or whatever you get on these little flat boards. It's very strange.
Does it enhance the flavor?
No, not at all. Okay. It's just supposed to look cool.
It does look
Silver Lake, too, last couple of
weeks. Oh, well, so if it's in Silver Lake, they know what's up.
Yeah, of course.
Silver Lake is on the cusp of everything.
Yeah.
So let's talk about growing – you grew up in the Los Angeles area, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so –
moved to Texas for a while.
When did you get into music? I mean, because you didn't originally start as a producer, engineer, guru, mixer. Like,
yeah, no.
How did you do this?
First grade.
What?
First grade.
The recorder?
No, yeah. Oh, violin and recorder.
Nice.
But I remember being
Fish
in first
was all state recorder.
Are you real? Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
NISMA.
So as we were kids, every Friday the teacher would let you bring in records, and this kid brought
actual records.
Actual records.
Yeah.
And this kid, we were first grade, this kid brought in his brother's Kiss Alive 2 record.
Oh.
And the cover. That was it. That was it. From that moment on, it was.
Did you start putting on makeup in first grade?
No, but I would just. And then I guess apparently, which I didn't know, is my mom got a call from school that I was jumping on desk. Jumping from desk to desk.
Like Ace Frehley?
Like, because I thought I was in Kiss. I was just. It's one of those things that something. I don't know how it happens that clicks in your mind and you just. You lose it.
That was Weird Al to me.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Weird Al was the first artist I ever got obsessed with. I grew up on the Beatles, the Who, all the classic rock stuff. But as a kid, I would always, I guess since I'm a little younger than you, I would get cassettes.
Oh, yeah.
And Fish grew up on MP3s. So that's like the generation gap.
Oh, wow.
And now vinyl is cool again. And cassettes are getting cool. It's so crazy.
Yeah, band just gave me their second record on cassette, which I don't have a cassette player.
No one does.
Yeah, but I'm going to have to find. But I've got it on Bandcamp so I can listen to it.
They sell it at Urban Outfitters. They sell cassettes now for a lot of hipster acts. Anyway, I digress. So Kiss was your gateway drug into music.
It was. And then it was Cheap Trick, Motley Crue, all that stuff. And I was that nerdy kid who would look at the back of records to see, you know, what is a producer.
I'm still that nerdy kid.
Yeah, man. I do all the time. Engineer, management, and just how did that work? And then I think the first glimpse I got is, I don't know how old I was, 14? I don't know. Just looking through phone books and found Motley Crue's management company.
When phone books existed.
Yeah, and try to pass myself off as a reporter. Can I get passes to the show? Like, how am I going to get down there?
Did it work at all?
Not at all.
Okay. But did you have a high voice?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just the fact that
I work for the New York Times.
Yeah.
And can I have two passes to see Kiss at the Forum?
It was Motley Crue at Irvine.
Oh, I think that venue changed, right?
Yeah.
Or is it done now?
I think they're tearing it down for condos, which is horrible.
That's
so sad.
That's everything. I mean, the House of Blues in L.A., don't even get me started. And I heard Amoeba. But anyway, I don't want to cry on the air. But something you just brought up about maybe 47 seconds ago, which I don't know. I don't have kids. You do. We'll go into that. But I don't feel that my iTunes library is going to be that interesting for a kid to look at. Yeah. And I looked through my parents, their vinyl collection, and then eventual CD collection when CD originally came in long envelopes.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. I have so many CDs that I would want my child to look through and read things like that and get into music like I did. Because when you buy it, when you get a JPEG of album art, it's not the same.
No.
It's not the same as putting it in. And I feel like you appreciate it less.
Oh, yeah. I actually, for my son's Christmas. I bought a bunch of CDs that influenced me and put a little note in each one in the game envelope. Say, you may not understand this now.
It's like Almost Famous.
Yeah, but these mess with my life. These change who I am.
Listen to these. It'll make you cool.
Yeah, yeah. It was Kiss, Motley Crue, Jeff Buckley.
Ah, Grace.
That's my audio Bible.
Dude can play guitar,
my
too.
My audio Bible.
That's so sad.
Tones, everything about that. The voice, everything is...
So even The Voice. Everyone on The Voice covers his version of Hallelujah.
Yeah, and he just blows everybody else away.
And no one gave a shit about him when he was alive.
No, not at all.
That's so sad.
That was a horrible part.
Yeah. Kind of like Sublime.
Yeah.
You know, they got so much bigger after he died.
Snot, too.
Oh, yeah.
Snot, too. Everybody's like, oh, they were very influential. Like, well,
not when he was alive.
Yeah. Yeah, so I did that and kind of put a bunch of those things together.
Did he appreciate it?
Years later, he kind of went, oh, I get it. What music did to you?
While it would be funny if he didn't, I'm glad that he did.
Yeah, no. All my kids, I've got four. They're all music people.
What are their names? Give them a shout out.
George. Stevie.
Not like four George Foremans, right?
No.
Okay.
George, named after my girl. Stevie, which is a girl, and her actual name
like
is
Nick's?
Stevie Ray.
Oh.
Because Stevie Ray Vaughan was one of the CDs.
I heard he's a semi-talented guitar player.
Yeah, he's okay.
Yeah.
He can play.
George, Stevie.
Tyler, which was named after Steven Tyler.
So there's Stevie Tyler.
I wanted to name him Lennon, but his mother, my ex-wife, wouldn't let me. So you named him
McCartney?
So I kind of slid in there and it's like, oh, yeah, some guy at work or some girl at work at the studio said that they were going to name a kid Tyler if they ever had one. But it was because I was a huge Aerosmith fan. I love Aerosmith.
Still am.
Yeah, and then the last one is David Jr.
Ah, was he the first?
Yeah, no, he was last.
Oh, yo, wait, so the junior was...
Is the last
was,
one.
Is the newest?
His mom named him.
Got it. I've never heard that before. Yeah. Usually it's the next in line. But speaking of Aerosmith, I'm going to tell you something that you might not know, which might depress you. I heard Joe Perry is a huge conservative. Like, ginormous conservative.
Yeah,
and with his Boston, I'm going to park the car and vote for Trump.
Yeah, exactly. I knew that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and I've been told by very people who know, in the know, who know these
connected.
Bands. Connected. Don't meet your favorite.
Oh, never meet your idols. Yeah. Never meet your idols.
I was told that about the guys in Kiss. Don't you? And this is by someone who's worked with them on a continuous basis. It's like, yeah, you'll be disappointed.
You'll be sorely disappointed. Yeah. I have a story. I'm not going to be too specific, but I met a singer who's arguably in one of the biggest bands in the world, and I had just moved to LA. I was 22 years old. I was backstage at his show not because of any of my connections, but because the girl I was dating at the time was super connected. And I pat him on the shoulder, and I was not fanboy. I was so polite. I said, "Your old band is great. This might give you a clue as to who he is. I hope it doesn't, or I hope it does." I pat him on the shoulder. I said, "Your old band was great, and I'm so happy for your success." And he looked at me, and he did this. He just made a noise, like, which is a combo of a burp and a fart, and I know, it's just, now every time I listen to that band, I know, you look like I, like, just, like, pantsed one of your kids.
Yeah, that's who I think it is.
We could discuss this off the air. Yeah. We're going to have some specific stories from Dave later.
Yeah.
So, you know, you Kiss, but what about, how did you get into music?
Picked up a guitar at 12 or whatever it was, bought my first acoustic. I think I begged my mom to...
Do you take lessons?
No.
Oh, you're self-taught.
I kind of did.
Pre-internet?
Through my cousin.
Okay.
Who was a big influence on me because he was, I don't know, 15 years older than I was.
Still is.
And he passed away.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, way to go, Scott.
I'm an asshole.
Way to just blow my whole day.
Wow.
Think about my cousin.
Shit.
Actually, and then, you know, he was like, hey, listen to this, listen
I'm
to
sorry.
That. No, it's all right. And I would get home from school, this is when I lived in Texas, and you could hear him playing. He had one room with just two half-stack Marshall half-stacks and like three Les Pauls. And on his days off, he worked out on the oil rigs in the Gulf. And like he started like 18, and he just was making tons of cash. And you could hear him playing Hendrix.
Okay.
Like four blocks
down. Another semi-talented guitar player.
Yeah. So I kind of just picked it up, and he would show me a few things. And I'm horrible, but I love it. And just started doing that and got
into... Most bands you love are horrible, too.
did our, you know, we'd do demos and...
How'd you do that? With cassette player? Or?
No, actually, when there's a little studio, yeah, well, four-track, a little four-track thing, but there was a studio in Sierra Madre that a friend of mine, when I was in high school, he was going to Loyola Marymount, and for his project, he was audio engineer, or I don't know what the... At that point, what it
sure,
was called.
That just yeah.
Yeah, he was a major and had to take a band in, and he offered to take us in, and we did one song, and I absolutely
you probably learned a lot about recording. When
loved it,
happening.
Loved it. Stuck in the did like a scratch vocal and a scratch guitar, which I was horrible at, and just went in control and watched everybody
else play
down
modest.
The chords.
You're talented, stop
and
it.
Just listened to it and was like fell in love with it. So after that, every band, every time these guys like, oh, we should do a demo, I was like, I'll pay for it, and I would go and because I worked, you know, was working, you know. First job at six, like 2 days after I turned 16 and just saved up and let's go in the studio.
You had the bug.
Yeah, and I would lay down whatever scratch and just go in the control room and just sit and watch.
Well, how did you make it a career? Because as your manager, this is your legit career right now.
Oh, it is?
I'd like to think so.
Oh, okay.
No, shit. No. Fuck.
started doing demos. At, like I said, I was the ex-wife and I had our first kid at 17. Moved out.
You moved fast.
Yeah. 18, had our little house, and it seemed like every weekend I was giving her, like, here's $40 on Saturday and Sunday. Go to the movies with your sister. And I would bring bands, and I had a little four-track.
Oh, at home?
At home, and record bands on a four-track at home.
Okay.
And was just like...
How were the acoustics?
Oh, they were awesome. It was, yeah, a little alcove where the kitchen was, all mirrored.
Okay.
Put the drums in there, guitar in the bathroom, singer out in the laundry room.
Oh, wow.
And
that's like the Say It Ain't So video.
Oh, yeah.
Weezer's video. Yeah. I think that they're singing in the laundry room.
Yeah.
We'll get to Weezer later. Yeah. Again, I love Weezer. Yeah.
And I just kept doing it until one day I decided I don't want to work at Trader Joe's for the rest of my life.
Why not?
I love it. Don't get me wrong.
Their uniforms are so great.
And it's a great career. Some of those guys make cash, but I didn't want to. I wanted to wake up and be happy.
I worked at a grocery store, man.
I wanted to wake up going, I have a kid, like I don't want him to hate me because I'm bitter at 40.
You know? Yeah.
So it's like I decided this is
so
it.
So you had your quarter life crisis.
Yeah, and I'm like I'm going in even before that. I'm like I'm going in. I'm going to go to school and did it. And
what school?
A place called Trebis. They're
Where's
long
that?
Gone. They're Canadian school, and they had a place on Sunset.
Okay.
Right next to the Cat and Fiddle.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. I forget what the address is.
You don't need to give the
address. I always remember the address for some reason.
It's right between I think Scientology has the Industry of Death Museum right
oh,
there.
Really?
Yeah, where it's like anti-psychiatry, which, believe what you want, but that's crazy. And
so I went to that school and just that was it and just got lucky. And the instructor was a baseball fan, as am I, and we started talking baseball and he invited me down. We would do all the classes at all the studio stuff at his studio.
Where was that?
It's called Red Zone. It used to be called Red Zone. It's now Glenwood Place in Burbank. And we would do everything there, and we got along, and he would invite me, like, hey, if you want to be a runner, you know, this week, the cult is in.
Just so you guys know who's listening, I want everyone to hear this. We're going to get to an advice portion, but no job is too small.
No.
That you're trying to do in music. Even, I mean, Kevin Lyman's going to be on the show next week. I've seen him picking up litter.
Yeah, no.
You got to break in somehow.
And it would be the point I would work when I
was the fluffer at Adobe before I got this job. So it's like, you got to work.
I would, when I actually got in a job at the studio, there'd be studio time open at midnight. It's like, well, there's some downtime from if you want to take it after the session, you know, just to learn. So I knew the day in advance, and I'd call my brother, like, your band want to record? And they'd come at midnight, and we'd work till 5, 6 o'clock.
Trial and error, dude.
And just go. And then get up, and I had kids, and get up, and I'd do this day after day. And that's what
home studios weren't as populous. Or the laptop studio.
Yeah, no, not if there was none of that.
And one thing I just want to give you, I guess, a few accolades. Your stuff sounds so good.
Oh,
when I went
you.
To your studio, it sounds like real musicians playing music, which I think is sorely missed.
Oh, thank you.
In the lexicon of music.
And that's all my mentors. That's because of the guys I learned under. Chris Huston, Mike Klink, who produced Appetite for Destruction.
Small time.
Yeah. Chris recorded I Can See From a Mile by The Who.
Whoa.
That
was my first concert.
Oh, really?
The Who, yeah.
Oh, wow.
My dad was obsessed with The Who. Speaking of... dead relatives. Oh, so now I'm going to get the sympathy vote. I love you, Dad. Continue.
The Lemon Song and Moby Dick for Zeppelin.
Okay.
So he and rock guy named Ross Hogarth, who's doing a ton of stuff now. Van Halen, Ziggy Marley.
Wow.
Just a ton of stuff. So
you definitely
learned,
touched upon quite a few greats that are probably in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things. Those are the guys I learned under. So when I still, that's how I work now. It's like the way they worked.
Like you're working a tape.
Yeah, exactly. There's something called the edge track, which you put the hi-hat just in case something happened to the edge of the tape and you wouldn't lose a kick. So you put the hi-hat there because it's, you know, I still line up my Pro Tool sessions like it's a tape.
That's good.
And I still do the same thing.
But you could do tape, though, too, right? If I wanted to record a tape, you would know how to edit it.
Oh, yeah. No, I on one session, we were recording a tape, and the leader of the band wanted to do an edit, but we had to wait for the Pro Tool to show up. So, hey, go to lunch. He took off. I looked over at the assistant, locked the door, get the other machine up, and cut the tape,
spliced
put it back.
It.
And he came back a half hour later and like, was this the edit you were talking about? It's like, oh, do we play with it? Like, no, I just cut it. And he freaked out. Like, oh, what are you cutting? It's like, dude, it sounds great, right? Let's move on.
Shut the hell up.
Yeah, I don't want to wait a day before we have to do an edit.
Well, that's one of the things about your approach that I like, because I had a phone call with you and Ross yesterday. Again, shout out to Ross for OB.
Ross.
The gentlest man in Pennsylvania. Yeah. But that you don't like anyone wasting time in the studio.
No.
So while you're tracking drums, other people are doing stuff as opposed to checking their Twitter feed.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's always it's a round robin thing. I kind of get everything set up after drums. So
there's no law.
There's no law. Like, I'm sitting in the chair sometimes 12, 14, 10 to 16 hours a day.
Cramps.
Everybody else can kind of like do what they need, but we're always doing something because it's a budget. It's on a budget most of the time, and there's a time constraints. Let's get it done. Let's make sure it's right.
No, that's wonderful to hear, because I always hear about, oh yeah, I'm going to the studio, and then what that entails is Snapchat.
Yeah. No.
And so there's no downtime. Obviously, there's going to be some points where they're editing, but at least the musicians can be semi-productive in that time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I always have someone doing something, like checking tunings, tune all the guitars.
When I was recording professionally, I would tune after every take.
Oh,
every
yeah.
single take.
Every time I stop tape or stop Pro Tools now, I have the guitar player tune.
Good.
They tune.
So we're going to take a short break in a little bit, but when we get back, we're going to touch upon your prolific work on Pinkerton.
Oh.
And then I was listening to Korn earlier today. I would love to talk about nu metal and the 2000s when that stuff permeated the airwaves, when it was a huge deal. Now I know that it's kind of lumped into that category, kind of how 80s was in the 90s or hair metal. But I would love to talk about that. And just before we got here, and I told Dave to save this, he started talking about a story in Mexico.
Yeah.
And we'll leave it at that because he will discuss it. So stay tuned. Waldman's Words will be back. Hello, we are back with Dave Dominguez, Waldman's Words, every Tuesday, 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Atlantic, which is Eastern. Thank you guys again for tuning in. Dave.
Yep.
Pinkerton, one word, one monumental record. I'd love to hear some stuff about that.
It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun listening to it every single day.
Yeah, end of story. No. Yeah, it was great. Weezer, we're in with, Adam Casper. Is at a place called Hollywood Sound. And
it's probably right near here, right?
It's on Selma.
Hollywood.
Yeah, Hollywood, right behind Jack in Box.
Oh.
Right across from
Jack in the Crack.
Yeah, right across from Amoeba.
Yeah.
So Adam had to leave. They still had a little time left. And I took over. And it was a lot of guitars and some background vocals.
A lot of feedback.
A lot of feedback. A lot of it was Matt Sharp's last record, so he did some stuff, did some backgrounds just before he left to
do the rentals.
The rentals, he was going on tour.
Which was a bad decision.
Yeah. And the guys would come in, and we'd start doing guitars, and at one point, Brian came in and was like, dude, I just saw Beck. Because they had a little farmer's market, and River's like, oh, let's go. And
he's starstruck by Beck.
Yeah, he literally just took off his guitar and walked out.
That's so strange. I would have assumed that Weezer was bigger than Beck at that time.
That was only the second record, right?
Yeah, that was their second, but their first record was so ginormously huge.
But, you know, they're fans. So they walk out, and it's an hour and a half, 2 hours later before I see them again. And they just walk in like nothing happened. All right, let's go. Like, cool.
And you're just chilling?
Yeah, I'm just chilling, watching TV, hanging out, assuming they're coming back.
Watching Sally, Jesse, Raphael.
Yeah, exactly. It's 90s.
Yep.
Right before. Yeah, so I just hung out on tour because I figured they were going to come back in anytime soon. And they came back in and just picked up.
They're notoriously reclusive.
Yeah. Nice guys, though. Sweetheart. I mean, it's just, you know, kind of like one of those things where it was really cool to see the tape. It was all tape. So you see the tapes like, oh, we had Fort Apache. Was like, I think Get You was recorded, and it was different places.
But you did Tired of Sex.
Tired of Guitars and Tired of Sex.
Oh.
Get You. There's a few. Because I remember that for some reason, Get You is the title I always remember.
Well, I honestly think, because Pinkerton was actually panned critically and disappointing sales, which caused, you know, them to almost break up and Rivers to grow a beard and go to Harvard and all that jazz. But I honestly think that Pinkerton would have been just as big as the Blue Album had the label issued Get You as the single.
Yeah.
Because Song 2 by Blur was big at the time, and so it could have been a competitor. But I don't know. There's a reason why I wasn't an A&R guy in the 90s. I was in high school.
You're in high school.
Yep.
And I didn't know about how influential it was until someone had come up and said, oh, you know, they keep mentioning Pinkerton.
I lead with that for you every time I talk about it.
I had no idea. It was 10 years later before I found out. I had no clue. It was another record, another cool band. It was fun. In fact, I left Hollywood Sound and did a session at I became a staff guy. It was at a place called Rumbo.
Okay.
Exactly 1 week later. Like, I left. Soon they were done. That was my last session. Left. Went to Rumbo. And as I'm walking down the hall to get coffee, I see Rivers walking towards me. He's like, dude, what are you doing here? I'm like, oh. And, God, it's going to drive me nuts because I just mentioned his name yesterday. The guy who did the Color and Shape by the Foo Fighters?
Gil Norton.
Gil Norton.
Yeah.
Was in the studio.
Pixies.
Waiting for them.
Yep.
And he was going to be recording the single, and I walked in and introduced myself. Yeah. Like, and I was like, don't be surprised if they don't come back. Like, because they said, we're going to go get lunch.
Right.
And I was in there with them and, like, introduced myself, said hi, and I said bye to the guys and hung out with Gil a little bit. And 5 hours later, I'd come out to get coffee off a session and pop my head in, and they're not there.
Of course not.
And he's like, oh,
Beck was back, dude.
Yeah, yeah. So this went on for 3 days. They booked 3 days for one song, and they never got back in. They were actually mixing with Jack Joseph. Puig mixed that record, and that was at Ocean Away.
Wow.
So they were doing that at the same time. But nice guys. Liked them a lot.
Well, speaking of Weezer, let's talk about nu metal. So I was listening to Korn. Korn was a gateway drug. Limp Bizkit, Papa Roach, who you've worked with.
Yeah.
Limp Bizkit brought the world Stained.
Yep.
Let's hear about some nu metal stuff.
I'd worked on Chinese Democracy.
20 years before it came out?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was 10 years long. It was a 98. And
the most expensive album ever made, I think.
Yeah, oh, it was,
GNR guys, just so you know.
Guns N' Roses. For the kids.
For the kiddies.
Yeah, for the kids. Yeah. I don't know. Who's GNR?
Yeah, I know. We're talking in acronyms. Yeah. LOL.
So one of the guys I had to give the technical rundown to was a guy named Jane Baumgartner.
Oh.
Who was coming in to interview for the job. For the Guns job, and he left his thing in the studio, and the studio, like, take that pamphlet for his studio. Studio, like, get that out of here, and I kept it, and I'm like, oh, it's a cool studio.
Mm-hmm.
Left the GNR sessions, was doing a pickup session at a place called Stag Street Sound, and Melody, the owner of the
studio. You worked in so many studios.
Oh, yeah, I think I've worked at, other than the record plant, is the only studio that I haven't worked at, but I've been inside.
I will get you there.
Yeah, I want to get there, just to do it, just say I did it. And was at Stag Street, doing a pickup session, and Melody's like, hey, they need someone for a pickup session at NRG. Can you go? And it was with Don Gilmore, who ended up producing Linkin Park,
Hybrid Theory.
Yeah, so I did that for a little bit.
Which just had its 16th anniversary.
Yeah.
How wild is that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I was there. I was during that whole record.
That album is older than some of the people listening to this right now.
Exactly. So I show up to the studio and work with Don for about a week, and there was this weird thing with the Pro Tools guy who was the assistant. Anyway, I was left out in the cold because the guy had to go be an assistant and not the Pro Tool guys were not. So the manager's like, I promise you a gig. Jay's doing this. So I met Jay because we recognized each other right away.
Hey, from his pamphlet.
Yeah. Dude.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, I'm doing this demo for Warner Brothers for this band called Pop Roach. Would you like to do it? It's like, yeah. Did a demo.
And you had probably never heard of them.
Never heard of them. Right. They got dropped halfway through the demo.
And then they signed to DreamWorks, right?
Warner Bros. Gave him the record, gave him the demo, still paid for it. DreamWorks got picked up.
Do you know the strategy of how they got big? They would hand out cassettes.
Oh, yeah.
They handed out cassettes with Last Resort on it, and nobody knew who they were. And then when Infest came out, it had like a 10,000 week without any radio. Yeah.
And I have those cassettes.
Damn right.
Have those cassettes and the EP, the demo that they released. And so that just kind of blossomed.
Nice guys?
Oh, sweethearts. All great. I talk to Dave, the old drummer, once in a while.
Wasn't he with Steven Tyler's daughter?
Yeah, Mia.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're divorced now, but...
Well, I heard that he had some issues.
Yeah, yeah. He's good, Dave. I don't know
good.
If you listen to. Yeah, he's all good
Hi,
now.
Hi, Dave.
The guys are sweet. It was a fun session.
They're from the middle of California, right? They're from
Northern California.
But yokel California.
Yeah. I've been up there. There's nothing but cows and grass.
And Trump signs.
And Trump signs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was around Christmas, and there was like, I just remember stuff like Tobin, the bass player, breaking into a hole, was auditioning to his bass player, so he put literally a mop on his head, and they had a video camera, and they just bust into the room, and he starts playing, like, I'm ready to try out. And there's Courtney Love in the video, just like freaking out.
Kind of shocked.
Yeah, just like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. And kicking him out of the room. And
makes sense.
Yeah, and then, you know.
She had a hole in her heart.
Yeah, yeah. That's very good.
I heard that Tobin isn't he the primary writer?
Yeah, at that point he was. I think he still is.
That's amazing.
I haven't seen him in a couple of years.
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, no, exactly. He wrote, yeah, he
I have a Tobin picture. Story.
Oh, really?
I mean, there's another Tobin, Hopeless Records. Shout out to him.
Oh,
but
yeah.
When I was here on spring break, my senior year of college, a lot of people go to like Jamaica or Mexico. I went to LA because I wasn't sure if I was going to move here. And we went to the Jimmy Kimmel Live show, which had just started. Oh. And Jimmy Kimmel, and this was like 100 pounds ago, Jimmy Kimmel. Oh. Jimmy Kimmel would always have a guest host on the air. Don fucking King was his guest host, wow, who was just going like this, only in America. And that's all he said the entire time. And Nicole Eggert from Charles in Charge / Baywatch was on. And the band was Papa Roach.
Really?
And so I thought it would be a good idea. I was in a band in college called Blue Delusion. And so I had a CD, and I wrote a little note, and it said, this is my last resort. And I said, Tobin! And he was just shocked that someone knew his name, because everyone was like, Kobe! Replace the last resort! And this was when the She Loves Me Not single, the follow-up album was out.
That actually was recorded for the first record.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, it was recorded for the first record and not put on the record.
See, this news? Papa Roach news. I never thought
it was actually on the demo, too.
Why? I mean, well, then again, Guns N' Roses had November Rain written, and they just didn't release it.
And something off Chinese Democracy, which has the same title, but it's a whole different song.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I forget what it was.
And Green Day wrote Good Riddance years before it came out, so...
I got a great Green Day story, too.
Oh, I want to hear that. I like Green Day, maybe even more than I like Weezer. I just saw them, and they played for about 3 hours, and you don't realize how many hit songs a band has until you see Green Day. It's exceptional. But, so yeah, Tobin and I talked for a millisecond, so that's my Tobin story. It ended there. He did not do anything with the Blue Delusion CD. Maybe he still has it. I highly doubt it. But, okay, so... You know what? Fuck this new metal stuff. I want to hear about Green Day right now. Okay, what do you want to say about Green Day?
Oh, so a friend of mine, Tony Flores. Tony, I'm going to let you know, that I mentioned you.
Hi, Tony.
Was engineering, I think it was Nimrod.
Oh, yeah, which had Good Riddance on it.
Yeah, he was doing some engineering on Nimrod. And Billy Joe likes to do the vocals in the control room next to the console, and he does his own punches.
Okay.
His own work.
He's so DIY, man.
Yeah, so... Tony would call me like, are you working? Like, no. It's like, I got Green Day's in and Billy's doing his vocals. You want to come hang out for a few hours? So I go to Conway.
What were you going
to
say? No?
Yeah, no. So you got Green Day in one room and you had Hole in the other room with Michael Beinhorn.
You have a lot of Hole connections.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why. And so I'm hanging out with Tony and out comes Billy like, hey. It's like, I'm done. Cool. So we go in there and listen to the vocal and he's like, Tony comps it, comes out and... go in the lounge and Billy's gone.
That's it. He's a phantom.
He just there were there were glass smoking devices.
Like a bong?
I'm just saying glass smoking
devices. Oh, sorry, devices. Sorry. You mean a tobacco pipe?
Yeah, about five feet high that looked like there was smoke still in it, and he was gone.
Well, that's what the song Green Day is about. Is I mean, it's basically about being high. They used to be called Sweet Children. So uh-huh. This is really not much of a secret, but yeah. But no, I'm sure after the iHeartRadio incident, things have changed a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I know, and my other Green Day is little connection is at Red Zone, where I actually got a job as an assistant, who the owner of the studio was one of my instructors. Mm-hmm. The studio manager, Candace, who manages East West, hello, Candace.
Hi, Candace. We're saying hi to a lot of people. Yeah.
Is her roommate at the time was Jerry Finn.
Oh, Blink-182, Enema of the State.
Yeah, and he
AFI
mixed,
Sing the Sorrow.
Yeah, and he mixed Dookie.
Yep.
Because
he was Rob Cavallo's guy, right?
Yeah, well, he was the assistant, and he was doing rough mixes for the band, and they were sending him out to mixers to...
We had Kim here from The Muffs. She's worked with Rob Cavallo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he produced a bunch of their records. All right, so we don't have too much time left, and I promised a story about Mexico.
Okay.
But before you do that, you gave your children a shout out, which is a beautiful thing. You are a family man, and I love that. So I just want to say it's nice to see that this day and age. Anyway, back to Mexico, the motherland.
So I'm doing actually Spain for me.
I'm talking about Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, yeah,
California,
LA.
Yeah, I wasn't referring to you. Stop it. California used to be Mexico.
Oh yeah. So go
so
to
we
the
live in Mexico.
Yeah, go to the motherland.
Yeah,
go to the capital. I'm working with this band called Kubo. And the label flies me out, meet the band. We're going to go to dinner that night, but the A&R guy has to stop
at... EMI Virgin, right?
EMI Virgin has to stop at the ATM for something. So Mexico's crazy. They don't care about lights, red lights, stop signs. It's just go. It's crazy. So effective as manager, not the A&R guy, now that I think about it. So... one of the guys tells me, watches the people come out because all the cops wear flak jackets.
Armored gear?
And M16s, and they literally just...
It's kind of like that on Long Island, too.
Yeah, they literally just hold up the muzzle of the gun to everybody that comes out of the door at the bank. And it's just, it's very, very random. Just kind of like, oh, hey, oh, muzzle it, you know, just in case. And I was freaked out.
Just in case of a robbery?
Yeah, or anything. Yeah.
Holy shit.
And... so A&R guy, in fact, is on his motorcycle next to us, takes off, and goes, let's go, start following him. All of a sudden, I look over, he's being chased by the cops, and he's flying through traffic.
Wait, chased on while he's on his bike, and they're chasing him on bikes or cars?
In a car, and they're getting cut off left and right. So the other guy from the label, I think it was one, and I don't know who he was. He was from the label. It's like, all right, let's go back. So we had to go back to the label. The guy parked his bike and jumped in the car with us. It's just random.
Wait, he fled the scene from cops?
He fled the cops.
That doesn't seem like a good idea.
No, but it's Mexico. You go to the label, and there are guard towers with guys with M16s.
Wow.
We flew to Mexico. We flew to Monterey to one of the nice studios I've ever been in, and there were guard towers
like
there.
Like Cartel Money Studio?
Yeah, it was just crazy. I
love the movie Traffic. Yeah. Continue.
No, so it was just... it just seemed like we'd go to dinner. There's armed bodyguards with us, and it was just... yeah, you don't want to get kidnapped in Mexico.
No. You don't want to get kidnapped anywhere, but then a place with a different due process, shall we say.
Yeah, I don't want to get stuck down there.
I don't want to get stuck down there either. So we have a little bit of time. I would love to hear if you have any advice for any kids or adults or grandparents that want to do what you do.
Do it.
Okay.
First of all, go out and do it. Don't talk about it. You know, you have to do it. You have to, whether it's you've got a laptop and you're at home and you're recording your friend's band. And
you have more options in 2016.
Yeah. You go out and do it. Record it. Send it to somebody. You're going to get rejected 1,000 times. But if you stop after the first one, it's never going to be heard. So find as many bands as you can and just record constantly. Find small studios where it's not that expensive and... you know, if you can find a band, you're lucky to find a band and get attached to them, you can all pitch in and go to a small studio and watch the guy doing it.
Well, that's why it's so great that you've name so many studios that you've worked in, because obviously not every studio is the same.
No, yeah.
But you learn your way to navigate them.
Yeah, there's studios you can go and just sit and watch, like I did. I literally just paid for my own demos so I could sit and watch.
Right.
And then I would take that home with me and kind of go, oh, let me try this on my little 4-track.
Would you splice at home?
I would bounce.
Okay. What does that mean to the pedestrian listener?
So I would take all those guitars and bounce it to another cassette, because all the little 4-track cassette, and then I'd have 4 guitars and I would mix those. I like it that way. Bounce it down, and then start vocals on the new with the bounce down guitars on the same cassette.
Okay.
So it'd be a mix of 4 guitars on 1 track, and if it sounded one was too loud, oh well.
So if Dave can do this back in the day, it's a lot easier for a 2016 millennial to do this every Mac comes with GarageBand.
Yeah, these kids are doing, I heard some stuff that are like, wow, that's really good. Again, you don't know if it's good because you can edit and that's, you know, that.
But the end result is good.
Yeah, the end result is good. You know, you can do some serious, serious stuff.
What's the difference for the people listening between Logic and Pro Tools and GarageBand?
To me, GarageBand is that home thing. You kind of like, I'm going to sync something in there. I'm going to get my rough sketch down. Mm-hmm. Logic is to me a songwriter's platform, because you can grab stuff easily and move it around and place it.
Moving his hands. You can't see that.
Yeah, you can't move my hands. I'm moving my hands. Yeah, sorry.
He's grabbing some Tapatio.
Yeah. You can grab stuff, move it around, and put it in where you want and construct your song. Mm-hmm. Pro Tools to me is that final, like, okay, now we're ready to record this. Let's go in.
That's the industry standard, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Everybody has, I think everybody has some
preference,
some other version of some software in the computer, but 99.9% of the studios I've ever been involved have always been Pro Tools.
Was that every Will studio I am who posted a screenshot, or Pharrell, of a stolen Pro Tools?
Oh, really?
I don't remember. I'm going to look this up as I'm talking to you, but they posted on social. That's so stupid.
So they downloaded a...
They downloaded like a pirated version, they had it, you know, they had a screenshot like working or whatever. I'm going to find this out. Wow. You keep talking about this.
Yeah, no, so that's how you can do it. You can just go out and find bands that you like, or friends' bands, and just record. That's all you can do. I mean, it's there's so many options that you can... You don't need great mic pre's at the beginning. I always got friends who are like, oh, I'm going to buy this great mic pre and spend $1,000 on this. Like, why? You don't know how to use it yet. Get to where you...
That's why I tell guitar students, you shouldn't buy a $3,000 Les Paul during your first lesson, because you might quit.
Exactly. And so you have to have a passion for it. I told my kids, like, if you don't have a passion for something, don't do it. I love this. I was off yesterday, and I was actually looking at watching YouTube videos of people in the studio.
That's amazing.
And that's
the dream, man.
Yeah, that's
the Mexican dream.
It is. It is. And we are all here in the motherland.
Viva la California.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm going to give you an elbow. Yeah, that's it?
That's it.
That's it? Yeah, I'll send you the check in the mail. Again, we've got Kevin Lyman from Warped Tour on next week. Jay Warsinski will be on soon. Hunter from AFI. I'm going home for Thanksgiving, and I am actually going to be playing a show for the first time ever with a project called Scott Waldman and Friends. Playing some songs I wrote. We're co-headlining the studio at Webster Hall. So I'm pretty excited about that on Black Friday, which is a Jewish holiday. And thank you all for listening. Special thanks to Fish again for recording us in the dark. And special thanks to Dave Dominguez, very talented, sweet guy. Check out all his work. Dave, give all your socials a quick plug, and then we will call it a day.
Website is davedominguez.com.
Creative.
You had that. Very easy. And everything, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, are all davedominguez33. And then you can find me.
Which is the year Jesus was when he died.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at that.
Yeah, I got the beard. So you can go see the lava lamps in the studio and the light ropes and see the vibe.
And book some time with him.
Yeah.